As many of you know, I spent several years living in New Zealand, much to my great joy. And when I first moved there, I moved to Invercargill, which you've probably never heard of. It's on the south of the South Island, and a lot of people who think of New Zealand do not think of Invercargill, because it's not Auckland or Christchurch or Dunedin or any of those Queenstown, amazing cities like that. But it is a small, beautiful city set in the bottom of the country. And when I went there, I began working part-time for the parish church and part-time for the diocese. I was a child, youth, and family educator for the diocese, and I was working with the youth in the parish. And very quickly, as we began to think about what we might do in the parish with the youth, it became evident that there was an issue in Invercargill with after-school time. You see, of course, it's warm, more or less, compared to here, most of the year in Invercargill. And after-school sports didn't happen all year, only part of the time. And of course, that was only if you were involved in the sports. And there tended to be, in that day, there were more boys than girls in the school system in the teenage years. And there was sort of some trouble brewing. I don't know why that would be, with a bunch of boys free after high school for a few hours every day. And so the parish decided we had some space and we could start a youth drop-in after school. So some of us started to work and we got together a nice room and got this youth drop-in going with meat pies. If you've ever been in New Zealand, those are a staple of teenage diet that we could heat up and, you know, things to drink and activities to do and a place to hang out and just be with your friends and with some supervision. And it was going really well, and we'd only been in it a couple of weeks, and one day after school I was walking to open up the drop-in. And there were all sorts of teenagers on the streets because school had come out. And there was a bunch of guys behind me. I wasn't really paying any attention as I walked down the street. I was thinking about what we might do that evening. And I heard this person yell out, "Beef!" And I thought, that's a weird thing to be yelling out on the street when you're walking along. So I completely ignored it and carried on. And then I heard a chorus of people going, "Beef!" I just kept walking, thought this is getting weirder by the minute. What are they saying anyway? And then all of a sudden it became kind of a rugby chant. "Beef! Beef! Beef!" And I thought, okay, this is really getting strange. So I guess I should find out what's going on, because these are, I think, kids coming to the drop-in. And finally they, in exasperation, yelled out, "Beef!" And I thought, all right, so I turned around and they all went, "Hi!" And I went, "Oh, they're, why?" And they went, "Beef. Beef is Beth." E-T-H in New Zealand is E-A-T-H. So they were calling my name the whole time. And I did not understand that it was me that they were trying to catch attention of. Well, the good news is that I'm in good company. That's exactly what happened with Samuel and Eli. They weren't listening either for three times. There's Samuel, he's a young boy, he's gone to sleep. There's Eli, I love the phrasing, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim, but the lamp of God had not yet gone out. So he was old and he couldn't see, that's what we're saying. But God was still part of Eli, and so Eli was probably still hanging out, and there Samuel falls asleep, and three times he is wakened by voice. And three times he goes to Eli. And every time Eli says, "Go back to bed, son. I did not call you. I did not call you." And finally, Eli realizes it's God who's calling him. And so tells Samuel to go back to sleep. And if it happens again, to say, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." Well, my group of young teenagers on the street of Invercargill were not necessarily the voice of God. I'm not saying that. However, maybe they were. You see, the voice of God comes to us in so many different ways. In fact, they were in the sense that they were calling into relationship. They were calling me into relationship. Can you imagine what it would take for a group of 14 to 16-year-old boys walking on the streets of a downtown of town with other people around to call their vicar by name? That takes a fair bit of courage in today's world. And not to just call once, but to call three or four times and yell until I finally figured out it was me. So really, maybe that was the voice of God in a different way, calling through them, calling me into relationship with them in a new way that changed our relationship after that day because I paid more attention. I paid more attention to when they were calling for me. And so in today's lesson, that's exactly what happens. Samuel begins to pay attention and listens to the voice of God. Now, God calls all the time, and of course, a lot of the time, we aren't listening. Let's be frank. We're sleeping. We're off in another world, thinking about other things. We're working. We're talking. Or perhaps we're just avoiding the whole issue. I don't think God just calls us when we are called to a new vocation, or a big job, or a different relationship, or a lifestyle change, or a ministry we're supposed to do. I think God actually calls to us a lot more often than that, about a lot more interesting things than just the big things. I think that God calls us all the time, such was my case, into relationship with a person, or a situation, or ourselves. That God has to get our attention. And through all the things that we do not to be listening, which are multitudinous, God is persistent. And then, of course, once we do begin to listen, we often discount what we hear. We mistrust the source. That gospel reading today, whenever Nathanael is called, when he is told that Philip says he's found him, and he says, "Look, we found him, the one who Moses said was coming." And Nathanael says, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" I think you're not right. I think you're dreaming. I think you're crazy. Well, we do that too, all the time. We mistrust the source. We don't believe. We think we're imagining it, or we think we're not worthy. And that's a great reason not to listen, not to really listen. And finally, when we do listen, which often takes a number of attempts of rugby calls and pokes and words from various sources, and we do understand what the call is, we don't like it. Or we're afraid, doubtful, angry, especially angry because it upsets the norm in some way. When God called to Samuel, the message was not a nice one. The message to Samuel was that God was going to do something new in Israel, and I love the way Catherine read it, that will make both ears of anyone who hears it tingle. That is what God was doing. And God said that he would fulfill against Eli and his family all the things, that they would essentially be punished for many of the things that they had done in their lives. Imagine a young teenage boy having to go to his master and tell him what the message from God was. Eli graciously says, "No, tell me. Be honest with me." And Samuel is given the courage to do so and tells Eli everything. And Eli says, "It is the Lord. Let God do what is good, that God decides." Well, we are not often that gracious, it is true. It often takes us a lot longer. And sometimes when the message is something we don't want to hear, we really just drag our heels. Because it's frightening to listen to God's voice. It's frightening to open ourselves up to other possibilities. Because call is very individual. It is molded to us. And even when it comes to a community like our community, before the service we had an information meeting about the chapel and perhaps doing some renovation there. And it's not just a renovation, it's because of new ministries, of new ways of being, of actually holding our space in a good way, with good stewardship, and using it well, and yet respecting its holiness, and all of those things. And we are called as a community to look into that, and how we might do that together to serve our community better. But if individuals within our community aren't called to give leadership to that, or to dream about it, or to ask questions, or to come up with great ideas, all which happened this morning, then it would never go anywhere. We would never do anything as a community. We'd all just sit here and come to worship on Sunday and then go home. We would never actually have dreams and visions and make them reality. So we are called as a community, but we are each called to participate in some way in that. And that's, of course, where the rub comes, because some of us think we're called one thing and someone else says something else. And that's the joy of community, and the challenge is to work those things out so that we can find a way forward that is best for us in this time and this place, and that is delivering what God wants us to. But God's call is individual. It is absolutely tailored to each one of us in our time and place. If you listen to, again, that reading from John, there's poor Nathaniel having just a little break under the tree, under the fig tree, hanging out, doubting this idea that Jesus is the one. And Jesus says, now here's an Israelite in which there is no deceit, trustworthy person. And Nathaniel says, where did you get to know me? They'd never met before. And Jesus says, I saw you before Philip called you. And Nathanael, that was the message Nathanael needed to hear. Nathanael needed to be recognized for who he was. Jesus didn't just say, oh, you random fellow under the fig tree. He said something about him. There's someone in which there's no deceit. And that spoke to Nathanael's heart. And it changed his view instantly. And he accepted the call and followed Jesus. Well, it's that tailored for us too. Just like the teenage guys who called Beeth, they were very tailored. I just didn't know that that was me. It's the receiver sometimes who doesn't understand how clear the call is, how specific it is. And that's a sign for us when we are called to sort that out. Are we really called or are we just imagining this? Well, if it really sounds like you, it's probably a call. It probably is. That's why when people are discerning for ministry, they are called in three different ways, from God, from the community, and individually. And those three all must be in place before someone is ordained. And they are checked and double-checked and triple-checked, and it doesn't mean you're a bad person if it doesn't happen. It means it's a different call. And all of us are in that process every day of our lives. Now, of course, this calling thing is unsettling. Because that call is so intimate and so personal, both in how it is given and what the message is for us, that it can really knock us off our feet. Because when it comes in a way that is particular to you, you know how some people, when they communicate with you, you know they're only going to answer you if you email them. Because if you call them, they won't answer. Or, you know, you have to send a text message, and then you'll have a phone call and follow up with an email later. It's more complicated these days. You used to just be able to have a conversation, and that would be it. But how we get messages and how we receive messages is very unique to each one of us. Even though we all use all of those things, probably, each one of us has a preference for our communication. And God directly uses those things. And even if we don't respond, I mean never, God is not going to stop if it's a real call. It's one of the flip sides of being absolutely loved and absolutely seen for who we are and absolutely cared for by our Creator. The flip side is we can't escape that. As hard as we try, as hard as we want, God will keep coming back until our life is changed. And if we say no, and we really mean it, because sometimes we do, that's all right, because God will work on us until we end up doing probably something similar anyway. It just looks different to us. Maybe not to God. Maybe the end result is still the same. You know, I probably would have worked with those kids still. I know I would have in New Zealand. I would have carried on with that job. But the fact that they called me out on the street in front of their friends and their peers, that changed it. It meant that I paid more attention. It meant that I knew we had a relationship that I wasn't sure of. It meant that God did work through them and grounded us in a new way, in a new place. And the point is that when God calls us and we say yes, whether it be right in the beginning or way down the track, our lives will be challenged and changed in new and exciting and sometimes completely terrifying ways. One of my friends has a habit of when I'm perhaps being a bit lazy or not feeling that great about myself, which happens from time to time, he always says to me, be alive in the day, get out there, do something. And usually I want to kind of hang up the phone at that point because I'm not feeling like being alive whatsoever. Like that's the whole point, just leave me here to lie in my bed or whatever. But that is the point, isn't it? God calls us again and again to be alive in the day, be alive in the moment, be alive to whatever we are called to. And often we have no idea what that is. So in the season after the Epiphany and before Lent, when we examine ourselves to the depths of our souls, be alive. Be alive to the opportunities that are before you, the ones that scare the heck out of you. Pay particular attention to those ones. And there's no other better way to be alive than to answer the call of God upon your hearts. Amen.